This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's conversation with Bill Koning of Modesto, California, originally from Grand Rapids, Michigan. He served with the 86th Infantry Division in World War II. That was the Black Hawk Division, which during its short time in the European theater built quite a legacy. The first action came along the Rhine River between Cologne and Bonn. Bill and so many other young and inexperienced soldiers had been packed into those 40 and 8 train cars and taken to this location, and on Easter Sunday, April 1st, 1945, word came that volunteers were needed for a dangerous patrol across the Rhine with the intent of capturing a German prisoner from the other side to gain intelligence.
You know, it starts at the battalion, and it comes bouncing, 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 and finally it's our platoon. The platoon leader volunteered for it. And so then it's now who in the platoon is going to go. And so they ask for volunteers, and my squad leader, who I admired very much, volunteered, so I volunteered. Jim Karakoff from Norfolk volunteered. He was our BAR man. And our assistant squad leader volunteered. So that was 1, 2, 3 out of that squad. And there was another one out of the first squad, just a regular infantryman, and another one out of the third platoon who volunteered. And so you got the leadership of the second platoon pretty well taken care of, at least the third squad taken care of. And so there were like 5 of us infantrymen and 3 engineers. And I can remember standing on they had a boat ramp going down to the Rhine River. And stand there and look around. There's just about 10 of us. And you think about that. Maybe I'm not coming back. That's when it hit me.
That's the first time you thought that?
Yeah.
I can see why.
It's the first exposure, really, to anything. And so it's the 1st of April. It's Easter Sunday. So they say, let's go. And so we run down the boat ramp, hop in the boat, motor won't start. Quick, get the paddle. We get the paddles out, we paddle across. Just before we get to the other side, a machine gun burst comes through the boat. I don't know how he missed as much as he did, but he did hit my squad leader. I look down and here's Cowboy Letro, Cowboy is his nickname, lying in the bottom of the boat, his face all blood. And so we get to the other side, and we hop out, we run up the bank, and there was a big church wall. Oh, maybe 30 feet high, big church wall. And just as we get ready to go into the town, which was a little path going into the town, another burst of that machine gun comes through and takes out the assistant squad leader. So now we've lost 2 already. And I quickly jumped into a hole that the eddy, that the spring thaw had made in the bottom there. And Kirchhoff, the BAR man, jumped right on top of me. He landed on my back. He said, "Oh, I just like the best hotel in town." And so we're stuck in this little hole in the ground. And I'm looking right up a boat ramp into the town. So I stick my head up to see what's going to happen. And I fake a little ding on the top of my head. And the machine gunner's gone again. So I duck back down into the hole. And I pick up my gun, and I was using a friend's gun. It was a BAR, an automatic rifle. And I put it over the edge of the hole because I'm going to fight back. I pull the trigger, and it's supposed to go brrrr. It went pop. Dumb thing wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. 1 shot at a time instead of automatic. So about this time, the lieutenant says, this isn't going to work. We better go back. So we jump up and go back. And so now we left 1 man there, the assistant squad leader. He was killed. And the rest of us run back in the boat, paddle back across the Rhine River. And when we land, then the Germans now have got big artillery, and boy, they start shooting at that spot where we landed. That's the first cannon exposure we had. And boy, he was accurate as all get out. Now, I don't know how much damage he did to anybody else, but our group survived. But it was just a real touch and go in their artillery like you wouldn't believe. So we knew what war was all about.
I guess so. I didn't want to interrupt you in any of that, but I do have a few questions. You say your assistant squad leader was killed, and it was your squad leader who was hit before that in the boat?
That's right.
But he survived?
Yes, he survived. The bullet went in his mouth. I saw him after the war. Took out 2 teeth, went all the way down his neck, through his shoulder, and they took it out of his arm where you have what they call them, angel wings or something.
Yeah.
Took it out way down in halfway to his elbow.
Wow.
He survived, became a refrigeration repairman in Tennessee.
Wow. But you're exposed right here. This is your first real taste of combat, and yep. you're already seeing one guy you said you really admired almost killed, another guy in your squad killed, and you mentioned a ding on top of your helmet. Now, that wasn't someone with a little mallet playing with you.
He was shooting at me.
That was a machine gun bullet
yes.
that hit your helmet.
Yes.
But fortunately, at the right angle that it didn't penetrate.
That far from the bottom of the helmet, so by 2 inches lower, he would have had me.
But it didn't even, it just bounced right off.
Bounced off.
Is that something that got your attention at the time, or is that one that night later on you're thinking, boy,
it got my attention. I kept my head down from then on.
Yeah, that's a little too close for comfort. So you guys had gone over to try to determine which German unit was there,
yeah.
grab a prisoner.
Yeah.
You realized, we're not going to get a prisoner. We got to get out of here or else yeah. we're going to be dead.
Yeah, the lieutenant realized that.
Uh-huh. And then when you got back to your side, their artillery was zeroed in on you. So what does that mean? There's shells going off right by you?
Yeah, they had us pretty well zeroed in. So you get down on the ground, you just sweat it out. A guy from another part of the platoon, when we landed, we knew they could see we had a wounded person aboard. So this, you're on the edge of a river now, and just up the river there was a cultivated field. And we hollered for the medic. And the guy that the Jeep driver in our company came bouncing across that field, and it's under heavy fire now. He volunteered and came bouncing across that field to get to Cali, pick him up. And fortunately, they gave him a Silver Star for it.
Well, they should.
Yeah.
He risked his life to save
yeah.
another.
Yeah.
But I'm still thinking about you being a 19-year-old kid. You're keeping your head down. You're ducking. But there's nothing you can do to stop that artillery from hitting you. If it lands on you, you're gone.
You're done.
So what are you doing with your head down? Are your eyes closed? Are you saying a prayer? Are you just gritting your teeth? What are you doing?
I don't recall any particular thoughts other than get as low as you can get. Get everything but your heels and your helmet. I don't have any thought now. Later on, we got more exposure to that sort of thing and mortar fire and all that. Got caught once in the middle of the street. And this is, no, first off, I said my squad leader got hit and the insistent squad leader got killed. They suddenly made me the squad leader. And here's a 19-year-old kid, the squad leader. Never done anything like that before in my life. And I got 6-8 guys reporting to me.
Yeah.
Now, the group gets these 3 new people coming in, replacements, because we were down and we lost 2, and we were only about 8 to begin with. Mm-hmm. The 3 are very, you remember them. One that was a 33-year-old Boston man, wife and 3 kids at home, and later on he got killed. Mm-hmm. One, he stuck real close to me all the time. And finally, one night, we were sitting outside somewhere on guard duty outside some farmhouse, black as night, couldn't see the end of your gun. And I felt him shaking. I said, "What's the matter, Pat?" He says, "I'm scared." I said, "Well, I am too." He said, "Yeah, but I'm only 15. And so Pat went home the next day.
You ratted him out, or himself out?
No, we ratted him out. We got rid of him quick.
Wow.
And everybody cooperated in getting rid of him because 15-year-old kid don't belong out there.
Yeah, and he had obviously lied
so
about his age.
So now that's another guy out of my group. So now I'm a squad leader that's supposed to have 12 people, and we got about 7 left now.
Oof.
And so from then on, when I talked to my friends, I still talked to one guy. We had it easy. We surely did. Our job was, occasionally we were in the front line, but it was never that much exposure. The war was just about over. It's my 1st of April, the war's over the 1st of May. So let's say we had 6 weeks of combat. Yeah, we walked and rode. We ride all night in trucks and walk all day. And we were cleaning out places. We were getting rid of people out of houses. We kicked people out of houses because we didn't want to leave anybody behind us.
Sure.
As you go through. So we really... Never were we, again, in a position where it was boom, 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 and we could see who we were shooting at. And most of us never even had to shoot at any point because we were clearing houses.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exposed to fire. I can remember crossing a bridge one time and a mortar shell plopped in the mud right next to the bank.
Didn't go off?
Didn't go off.
Wow.
It wasn't hit the mud. Just went... But, you know, it was walk all day, ride all night, walk all day, ride all night. I've got 6 guys reporting to me, 7, 8. You mentioned, what do you do when you're in the middle of the street and you get caught? You lay down and you sweat. where you stand and get down in a doorway somewhere. It's one particular incident where I was just 2-3 days out there someplace, and one guy said, "Hey, Conan, go on, Sergeant, go over there. Wally, something's the matter with Wally." So I look around. Here's Wally laying in the middle of the street, shaking like a leaf. I run up to him. He says, "If I get out of this alive, my kid's going to Sunday school every Sunday. If I get out of this alive, my kid's going to Sunday school every Sunday." So this 19-year-old philosopher that I am, you know, with all this training I've had, I say, "Here, have a cigarette." I had to get him calmed down and get him out of the middle of the street.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just funny stories like that that come back and haunt you.
And what was it, do you think, that enabled you to avoid those moments of panic where it's just so consuming that these guys couldn't function and couldn't move on?
I don't know. You survive. You look for a place to survive is what you do. Mm-hmm. And so I say you get down next to the curb. That's all that's there. You get a chance then when it's not something coming at you, quick, get into the doorway of the house next door or a hole that you see someplace next to it. If you're in the country, it's down in a ditch.
You mentioned that mortar shell that lands in the mud next to you. I don't want to assume something that's not true, but it sounds like had that mud been a little harder, you wouldn't be
off.
Here.
Yeah.
And it would have killed you.
Yeah. But I realize that now, but then I'm lucky.
Yeah, no big deal.
It spurred me on. I ran a little bit faster.
How exhausting was it?
That's one of the things that, I want to talk to you later about some other thing, but that's sure. One of the things is you're dead tired all the time. And so when you go to sleep, you sleep. And if the sleep is 2 hours or 6 hours, you sleep. Mm-hmm. And you've never been so tired as you are. And yet you can run just as fast as you ever run. And you can get around just, and you can yell and everything else just as fast. You've got a lot of junk hanging on you. You know, you got food and canteen and all that stuff, but you can get it out of the way to run.
I know you weren't over there all that long of a time, but did you have any correspondence from home?
Yeah, I don't recall writing home for about 3, 4, or 5 weeks. And I don't remember. There was always letters, but, you know, I'd get a letter from my mother. I had a girlfriend, my wife, later wife. But I don't remember receiving mail too often.
Well, you know, I'm realizing now that you mentioned that, we skipped that chapter about the girlfriend. So you were sweet on her before you went overseas.
We knew, had known each other since we were 10 years old. Our parents worked for the same newspaper.
Uh-huh.
We had dated a couple times before I left. I can remember when I was in basic training, her brother was killed. And so I remember writing a letter to her. I don't call girlfriend, we were correspondents.
Right. But knowing what we know now, you know, if that machine gun bullet had been a little lower or that mortar a little harder landing, you would have never come home to marry her.
Yeah. Well, we didn't dwell on that.
There were 4 sons that never would have been born and some grandkids and great-grandkids, too. That's important stuff. So you're going day and night. You're exhausted. There's still enemy shells that are coming your way. Are you starting to get an idea that this might be over soon, that Germany's about to surrender? Were there rumblings?
No, but you're going through, you're seeing a lot of prisoners. You're seeing a lot of people that have been released from prison, prison camps. You know, and the Germans just opened up the gates and they're lost. And I got a good story to tell you about that. We'll get a little later. So you're seeing a lot of pitiful things. We would throw a tin can of rations. You'd eat it with a spoon, a fork. Mm-hmm. You'd throw the can in the ditch. Guys walking down the road would come and pick up that can and take their finger and rub it around the inside to get the grease. And that was our breakfast.
Wow.
So you see a lot of pitiful things. It isn't any fun to kick a mother out of her house either.
Oh, sure. But that's
what
you guys
don't think
had
about
to do.
It, but that's what I had to do.
And you guys don't know. There could be someone in the basement. There could be someone hiding.
You go through the house, you don't know. You know, so you're just doing a job. And I say, you're tired. You don't dwell on those things. But you see the awfulness of war when you see a mother and a couple little kids down there pushing a baby buggy, and that's it for their belongings.
Mm. And then you've got your mother back home in Michigan hanging a blue star in the window.
Yeah.
Were there days that you thought she might have to change the color of that star?
No, you don't dwell on that. You're invincible. You're only 19 years old.
That never wavered for you, huh?
No.
All right.
You know where you go for everywhere. You worry about your own protection. You worry about your guy's protection. You look at the ditch. You make sure you got a spot to jump to. But you don't worry it's ever going to hit you. You don't do that.
Of everything you faced, from cold weather to, you know, enemy machine gun fire, the mortars, artillery shells, was there one thing that bothered you the most, or scared you the most, or seemed the most distressing?
You know, as you look back at it, seeing Cowboy laying in the bottom of the boat with blood all over his face, you know, that's distressing. But, you know, I didn't see anybody writhing in agony or any of that sort of thing. As I say, we were fortunate because we were clean up. We were not sitting out there in the middle of a forest for 6 days wondering whether you're going to get fed or not.
As so many others were.
As so many others, as I say, we had it easy.
And that's all relative, isn't it? I don't think most of us listening today would consider any of this easy. And there's still more to discuss with Bill Koning of Modesto, California. He earned a Bronze Star for Valor, by the way, because of his actions on that Easter Sunday patrol. He's thankful the Purple Heart didn't come along with it, but he would spend some time in the medic's tent later. Bill didn't share that with us, but his friend Ralph Cole's book tells the story of how Bill injured his leg while riding on a tank. I have a link to that book for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also find a photo of Bill with his Bronze Star and a medal he values even more than that, his combat infantry badge. And we're going to hear the rest of his story when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.